Hey, it's me, Dave Stone, former co-host of the Boogie Monster podcast. From 2016 to 2023, myself and Kyle Kinane got together each week to ramble on about ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot, and other mysteries of the universe. Or at least that was our initial intentions. But if you've listened before, you know that it usually devolved into disjointed rants about vans and fried chicken. During that time, we also ran a Patreon page that offered up exclusive bonus episodes to our patrons, usually in the form of Q&A sessions. And even though the Boogie Monster is currently on an indefinite hiatus, we're offering up those old bonus episodes to the general population so that everyone can enjoy our old nonsense. Hopefully someday soon we'll dust off our microphones and resurrect the Boogie Monster, but until then, enjoy a blast from the past from your old pals Kyle and Dave. Thanks for listening.
The sun is filled with ice and gives no warmth at all. And the sky was never blue. The stars are raindrops searching for a place to fall. And I never cared for you.
Mythological, and I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say it sounds sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, mythological.
We are the Patreons.
Patreon.
Those who give.
That's right.
Howdy, Patreons. Thanks for your patronage. That didn't roll off the tongue in any way whatsoever. It's 1 p.m. on a Wednesday, and Dave's drunk.
I'm not drunk. I'm drinking.
But it's not from anything sad, right?
Okay. No.
Okay,
no.
Good. Nothing that's sad. Okay.
No, I just got done recording my other podcast with my wife, the Stonebergs. There's a plug to people who are already paying me money. And yeah, for some reason, yeah, she's like, hey, you want a cocktail? And I don't normally, it's not like I drink during that podcast all the time, but she's like, yeah. You want me to fix your cocktail? I was like, why not? And got me a little tequila cranberry.
Oh, okay. All right. That's good. Good for the urinary tract.
Mm-hmm. Man, you know what I'm getting into right now?
What's that, Dave?
I don't know where I've been, or I don't know where they've been, but I'm just now learning to appreciate bitters.
You know what? I never made a lot of fancy drinks. I know that's kind of a staple to have in your in your bar cart, in your, what do you call it, a mess kit? I don't know what you call it for bartenders. Like, I guess you're well.
Yeah.
That's maybe. What the non-drinkers always get is, like, soda water with bitters when they're at a bar. Because I guess it still kind of feels like you're having a cocktail. Like you can keep your hand busy.
Yeah, and there's something to, I don't know what bitters are, but, like, there's, it adds some sort of, you know, texture to it.
A texture, you say?
I can't. Not a texture like, you know, you're going to chew it, but there's definitely a, and I know you hate this word and I do too, but the phrase, there's a mouthfeel. There's something going, you can tell it's not just a flavor. There's more to it than just the flavor. There's some sort of, if liquid can have a texture, there's some sort of different liquidy texture going on.
It might dry out or something. They're like, no, I get what you're saying. It's a botanical matter. That's what they say it is. Underberg is the one you always see, like, in the bandolero hanging behind the bar. Like the big strip of the little guys hanging out.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I never paid any attention to bitters, but I got a bottle of orange bitters, and then I've got this charred pineapple bitters. Oh, boy.
Nice. Very nice.
Just adds a little something extra, you know?
Nice, man.
But yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm doing tequila, cranberry, and orange bitters.
I'm having coffee with a room temperature coffee with a sweet cream in it that Rachel bought accidentally, and she don't like it. And so now I'm just putting it. It's like I'm having a bunch of chocolate milk right in the middle, right in the beginning. I would say beginning of the day, but we start things off around 10:30 around here.
Yeah, yeah.
Early lunch.
Yeah.
Well, that's good, man. Hey, have yourself a Wednesday. Is it nice down there? Yeah, is it at least nice out for you? Sunny
it's
day?
It's like 74 and sunny.
Of course it is.
It's really nice.
Of course it is. God damn it.
How is it there?
Just fucking gray and wet.
Really?
I deal with it. I was almost going to go on a bike ride today. I got lazy this morning. Went to the I did the gym the other day. Overdid it. Got my OCD got the best of me, so I got to do reps of 10, and I had put too much weight on there. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I'll just get it. And too much weight for me is not a lot. Also, I think, was I joking with you about that? Like, I walked into the gym and saw somebody using a machine that I used last time, and I was like, oh, that's how you do it.
No, you. It wasn't.
Oh, okay, yeah, funny. I was like, oh, I was on that thing just ass backwards. It was.
I've done that.
It was like a chest machine, so your arms are out.
Uh-huh.
But the resting position for the machine, like the part where you'd hold your hands, was like way behind your back. I'm like, oh, it's because you're supposed to face the other way and pull outward. And I was just getting on there, and nobody said. I assume that everybody in there just looks at me like I'm an asshole, and I'm okay with it.
Why would you assume that?
Because maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like the gym culture, it's probably a lot like stand-up, like going to a show where everybody mm-hmm. knows how to do stand-up, and then imagine somebody new at an open mic, and how you'd be like, oh, look at this guy making all the mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah, but I feel like every time I go to a gym, I feel like there's a good mix of, like, you can always tell, okay, these guys, just by looking at them, or gals, or the regulars, because they're obviously in good shape, and they seem to know what they're doing. And then there's always a good dusting of amateurs like me. They're like, well, am I doing this right?
Well, that's why I just wear free clothes, so people know.
Yeah.
Like, oh, yeah, these are sweatpants from a brewery. And like a comedy club t-shirt. So I'm not like rolling in there like posing like I'm
with your gear.
Yeah.
Yeah. What exercises were you doing the other day that you're now sore from? What kind of weight you throwing around?
Chest and arms, pushing and pulling.
Right on.
I did some pushies. I did some pulleys.
Doing the free weights or doing like the machines?
No, the machines. And I got to stand and look at it for like 20 minutes to figure out what it does first. And I still get it wrong. And then then I'm on there, and then my ego doesn't let me stop. So I'm on there doing it wrong. But I got to continue with like at least one full set of it to be like, no, I know what I'm doing. But yeah, just pull-ups and shoulder, chest and arms kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
I figured my lower half. Mm-hmm. Is maintain. I'll do like warm up. I'll do like a bike or the stair climber thing.
Yeah.
To do warm
up. Yeah, and you do enough biking.
But yeah, but the lower half's kind of handled. I just like maybe a little bit trying to get, you know, I'm trying to record a special in April. I want to look a little bit better. I was going to say, I'm going through the you getting ready for the wedding. That's, I'm kind of doing the same thing.
Uh huh. Okay. Good for you. Good for you, buddy.
As I put basically melted ice cream into my coffee. man, buddy, you want to answer some of these questions?
Let's do it, man. Let's do it. This is the same batch we were working from last month. So if you didn't see me send out a notice for new cues, that is why.
Well, people have, they filled us up. So we'll take a time to try and get to all these instead of asking for new ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for responding.
So let's,
so much.
And there's always a chance. I pulled the ones I thought we hadn't gotten to yet. But if we do somehow repeat one, it'll be okay.
Okay.
Our memories aren't what they should be.
No.
What with the 1 p.m. tequila and all.
Shit, yeah, man. I guess I'll try and steer this the best I can, Dave. But you're coherent. You're doing good.
You're just having
a midday good time.
No, I just meant like yesterday I pulled all these from the original batch and was just like, I don't think we answered that one. I'll put this on the list. So
yeah.
We might repeat one, but no big deal.
You're just having a little.
But yeah, let's get into
it. A little high noon Watusi for yourself over there.
It's high tea. Let's see. I'll start with Mark McConaughey. Is it McConaughey like Matthew, or is it McConaughey? Maybe it's neither.
Good start.
Yeah, I think it's McConaughey.
Yeah, there we
go. Good start, Dave.
Mark M. I'll call him Mark M. Dave, I was watching the Jimmy episode of Seinfeld recently. Mm-hmm. Do you think they could get away with the Kramer Mel Torme story arc in that episode on a network show now? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I would assume not. I love that episode, though.
I was thinking about that. Like, what?
God.
What episodes of TV couldn't you get away with?
I think there's quite a few. I mean, you got to remember Seinfeld now. It went off the air in 98. So mm-hmm. It's at its youngest, 24 years old. And it started around 90, I think. So obviously a lot of changes. For those who don't know the episode, just briefly, it's so funny. Two storylines, as they always do. Usually, the cool thing about Seinfeld, if you really watch it from like a comedy writer's or script writer's point of view, not to bore you with details if you're not interested in this, but like most sitcoms probably have an A story, and most of them will have a B story. Every now and then you'll see a C story. Most every episode of Seinfeld had four stories. There was an A, B, C, and D. All four main characters usually had their own storyline going on in that episode, and at least two or three of them would intersect by the end of it. So that's what I loved about Seinfeld, is how they were so good at like weaving all these funny little stories together. But with this episode, one of the storylines is George is trying to sell those jumping shoes, those workout jumping mm-hmm. shoes that kind of have the little platform up around the ball of the feet, and it's, you know, walk around on those all day, and they're supposed to build up your calf muscles. So Kramer gets a hold of a pair of those. So he's, after they play basketball, he doesn't have his regular shoes, so he wears those home. So he's out in public walking around in these weird shoes. Plus, he had just got done from the dentist earlier in the day and had a mouthful of Novocaine. So he's walking with these weird shoes, and his speech is all affected because of the Novocaine, and he runs into Mel Torme in a cab, who just happens to be doing some benefit that night for special needs, mentally challenged people.
Yeah.
And he thinks Kramer is one of those people, and is really funny.
I mean, Always Sunny did it.
Yeah.
I think...
they got away with it.
I mean, it's mistaken identity. You're not... Mm-hmm. Somebody... This is where, as much as like, oh, yeah, I guess I'm left or liberal, but some of this shit, like, they're not... Are they making fun of anybody? Like,
no, that's the thing. I don't think they're making fun of those people. They're making fun of the situation.
Yeah, so that's, I feel like, where is this maybe...
That's my same defense when I try to use ethnic voices.
Well,
I'm not making fun of them. This is just a different way of speaking.
Yeah.
And it's interesting.
You can point it out, but don't imitate it. Hey, that person from that region sounds different when they pronounce this word. But
sometimes it's hilarious.
But that is, why is it okay to do a Southern voice, for someone to do a Southern voice, but not an accent where the person is of a different color?
It's a great question, Kyle.
That's a, how is it not mocking?
I get offended when Hollywood does Southern voices, but for different reasons, just because they're all so bad.
Well, people don't get the dialogue right, how like Texas Southern is different than Georgia Southern. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just feel like anything in this realm, dealing with, you know, special needs folks or, you know, challenged folks, I feel like regardless of what the nuance is, it's still like off limits. Like, no, can't use this for any type of fodder, for any type of storyline. I'm not saying that's right. I just feel like that's how it is.
But I'm trying to argue for this person who would get offended and where they would get offended. Like, mm-hmm. Well, they're mocking disabled people. It's like, well, how are they doing it? Really, they're mocking Mel Torme. Mel Torme mm-hmm. is really but he's the one who doesn't realize that Kramer's just a person that has these other conditions, and he saw him as a challenged individual. So, in essence, it's Mel Torme's ignorance in the situation that's, if you could be offended towards anything, it's that. It's not the show making fun of special needs people. You know, they're not saying, look at them. It's here's a situation where somebody has these circumstances that happened to them. I can justify it as not being offensive.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, I'm from a, this is coming from the point of privilege. Like, what's the big deal? Why would you be? But I'm trying to argue for somebody who would be offended by it. And I don't know where I would find that offense.
Yeah. And I agree. I agree with you. But if the question, do you think it would be on a network show? I feel like networks now are just so.
Oh, yeah.
Not, I don't know if sensitive is the right word, you know.
I don't know what, so I don't know what's on a network anymore. Yeah. What shows are on networks?
I have no idea. That's a great question. I don't watch.
I saw Janelle James pushing some Abbott Elementary or something. I haven't watched. I just know she's funny. So I was like, oh, cool. Good for you. Get a show.
The last one I watched, and I don't know. I think this one got canceled and then either picked up by the same network or another one. But I did watch and enjoy thoroughly AP Bio with Patton Oswalt and a few others. The guy from Always Sunny. I forget his name.
Well,
Glenn Overton, that guy?
Glenn Howerton.
Howerton, yeah. That show was, I really enjoyed that. And I guess it did like two seasons and then it got canceled, but then I think it came back somehow, but I don't know if it's on the same network.
I'm busy watching.
But yeah, other than that, I haven't watched a network show in forever.
Yeah, well, I don't have the time with all these 90 Day Fiancé episodes coming out. We start, I will say, this should be regular episode stuff. We did start watching Station 11 the other night. Looks like it's going to be heavy.
I don't know what that is.
It's on, I think it's Netflix. I don't know. We only watched one episode of it. Uh-huh. Woof.
Station 11.
Yeah, buddy. I think it's a little bit, I mean, it's about a pandemic and stuff. I've only seen the first episode. Seems like it's going to be heavy. But that being said, I think you could get away with it because I think where the target of the joke is not, it's Kramer being Kramer and Mel Torme mistaking him for that. So that's my take on it. Mason says, are you guys nostalgic for the beginnings of the podcast at all? Nothing better than Feral Dave and the Learning Annex adventures. It has been, are we coming up on 6 years or 7 years now?
Dude, we're coming up on seven.
Can you believe that?
No, I can't. It's crazy.
7 years.
And think of all the changes. All the changes that have happened.
Yeah.
Good Lord, when I started this, I was living in a van, and I was a lone wolf. Wasn't attached to anything or anyone.
That was weird. The early days, we were like, all right, I'm going to get out of here. And then you just go in your van in the front of my house.
I remember too, like scheduling each day, like we do every week now via text, you know, hey, what time you want to do it? And I remember many a weeks being like, all right, that's cool. I'm already here. So just, you know, whenever.
I've just been sleeping in front of your apartment for a while. All right, man.
Oh, now I got a wife and a roof over my head.
Buddy.
How about that?
How about those changes? Yeah.
Man, that is.
I'm
that's nuts.
I think I'm impressed that we're still bullshitting for this many episodes and still have laughs about it. I could say, yeah, I'd get nostalgic about the early times. There was some effort put in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there was. And we were talking about this off the air. This is a little inside baseball, but like I do miss. You know, not to be sappy about it, but I miss being in person with you. I feel we've been doing this over the phone, I guess, since the beginning of pandemic, basically. So almost 2 years.
Two years.
And I'm glad we figured out how to keep it going remotely. But I do think we lose a little bit of chemistry or rhythm or timing or something. Just not being able to see each other.
Yeah. You know? I think the sound quality went up without us both hunched over a shitty IKEA table with bad mic stands. But we'll get back there. We got shit, man. We're going to be doing special show. What was that? May up in Eureka.
Oh, right. Have we announced that yet?
Comedy Club, May 6th and 7th.
There you go.
In Eureka, California.
Stand up and probably a live episode.
Stand up and a Boogie Monster. And we're going to be in Bigfoot Country, buddy.
Hell yeah, dude.
All right.
You got any time off? Have you? We could talk about this off the air, I guess, but we should definitely schedule some time off immediately after that before you go off to any other shows so we can go squatching.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to be around, man.
Yeah, that'll be nice. That'll be nice. All right.
So look out for that.
But, yeah. Yes, almost 7 years now. But, yeah, those were fun times in the annex with the chalkboard paint. And the sitting on the beanbag chairs and medicine balls and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, down in that down in the smelly haunted annex.
Oh boy.
All right. What you got?
Let's see here. Let me find something here. Okay, Albert Cole. Cool, Cole. Any advice for someone getting out of a long-term relationship? It's the first time being alone since high school, so anything you got that could Damn. Someone trying to figure out who they are and general advice would help. Sorry to hear that, Albert, but that's life. You probably, you know, this won't be the, this probably not your first, won't be your last heartbreak or disappointment. Life is just a series of disappointments, out there. And then at the end, you die alone. No. No, man, that sucks,
who
dude.
They are. Jesus, Albert, buddy.
No, but that's important, though. My advice to anybody, especially a young person getting out of a long-term relationship, just fucking hit the pause button for a while. Don't immediately get into something else.
Oh, yeah.
You know, now if you need to go sow some oats and do whatever, as long as you're, you know, ethical about it, sure, do that.
Be gentlemanly.
Yeah, be a gentleman. Don't be a fucking prick.
With the partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in terms of, like, you know, really getting tied emotionally to someone else, especially when you're young, you need that time alone. You need to. I don't see how people can really figure out who they are when the majority of their life has been spent connected to one other human being.
Well, yeah, I think that's what he's having. This comes from not the relationship thing, but I just. Go out and do stuff that you're going to... I do this for myself. Go do things that you're going to be bad at, so the idea of you being good at it isn't tied to your enjoyment.
Yeah, it's a great point.
Whether it's a sport or a hobby, pottery, shooting hoops or something, take away the desire to be... I mean, I think that comes from, like, trying to control things around your life or being a perfectionist. It's like, oh, no, this is... Mm-hmm. Do things just for fun, just to make you happy. And don't worry about... Yes. How good you are at them, or if somebody's going to be like, you're not good at this, why are you doing it? Like, because I just, it brings me happiness. And it's, and then that's the only reason it exists.
Yeah.
You know, trying to learn an instrument or something, just this thing is just in my life to be a distraction and make me happy when I'm not happy. So I would encourage doing something like that. And maybe that thing happens to be a group activity. So you're around people. You know, not in a romantic sense, just being like, oh, here's who I am when I'm by myself, just hanging out with people, trying to make friends.
That's a great point, too. I think so many people, you know, stay in bad relationships because they don't want to be alone and they fear loneliness.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, there's cures to loneliness that don't necessarily involve relationships, like you said, you know, just platonic relationships, friends, you know, just, you know, having common interest with other people. You know, that can definitely cure loneliness, but without getting you into another situation romantically or emotionally that maybe you're not ready for.
Yeah, I mean, that was I was never in a relationship much at all until the one I'm in now. And it was just like, well, no, stand-up's my thing that I'm going to work on. Mm-hmm. And then... I don't know. That was my social group too. Was stand up like, oh, at night, like, well, I'm going to go do a spot, but then that's where all my friends will be. So that's what I wondered about people that were single that didn't have a social component to their, like, maybe it's your work friends, or maybe it's you do trivia groups at a bar or something like that. You know, like social outings that don't have the pressure of being date potentials.
Yeah. Yeah.
Best of luck, man.
Yeah, and I just think, I think it's so important to just at least have little chapters in your life where you were just alone, at least, you know, in terms of a relationship. just worry. And you also need that. You need to, you know, to be good at a relationship is to be selfless and to put them first. And that's important. But I think you do need to experience parts of your life where you're not having to think of other people. You know, whether it be a girlfriend or a child or, you know, if you have kids, don't do that. You know, but I'm saying if you don't have kids, you know, and you do find yourself in a situation where maybe you're no longer in a relationship, just take advantage of that and just be with yourself and kind of learn who you are, you know, as an individual, as opposed to what role I play in a couple or a relationship.
Yeah, it's a thin line between being a hermit and just being sure, you know, finding out how to enjoy your own company.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we're like, oh, man, I'm going to watch a real weird movie tonight. And just, you know, you just like, I get, again, breaking out of the normal things that you would do. But shit, man. Best of luck, Albert. It's a rough spot to be in.
You'll be all right, buddy. Get out there and do something fun.
Occam's Electric Toothbrush says, if you were sent to hell and forced to be a prop comic, what would be your signature prop?
Oh man, that's a great question. Oh, you know what I think is a natural one for me? There other than Gallagher smashed a watermelon, but hadn't been a lot of food used as props. Like what if that was like your only thing? Like, oh, I don't have puppets or props, but I'm always doing something with food. I'm gonna grill this steak and make it funny.
But I don't know if the part of being sent to hell is that's why it's bad, is that you have to be a prop comic, or it's hell based.
I see what you're saying.
I'd be a dead baby ventriloquist. I mean, if it's hell, you should go for the most tasteless thing you could do. I'd be dead baby ventriloquist.
Oh, my God.
Or just a dead baby in general. I'm dead baby.
What? Is a dead baby in hell?
Well, yeah, because it didn't get baptized in time, so it's a Catholic baby.
Right, right. That's right.
Because hell, you know, if you don't get baptized, you can't get into heaven, so hell's filled with a bunch of babies, if you believe in. Mm-hmm. Or maybe I grabbed one on the way down. I grabbed one out of purgatory on the way down.
That's why I got saved. I repented of all my horrible sins, and I accepted Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior when I was six.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's about the time you get your first. Well, we have to, baptism is to get rid of the original sin, and then you get your first communion was where you go through the whole cult procedure of eating the body and blood of Christ. Fucking weird. You could look at a cult and be like, that's weird because only 12 people are into it. But you take anybody that doesn't know anything about the Catholic Church and plop them in a Sunday service.
Oh.
It's just as fuck. Every religion looks crazy if you don't know anything about it.
I went to a Catholic funeral when I was like 10. Mm-hmm. Never had any prior exposure to Catholicism. Creeped me the fuck out.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what they do different at the funeral. I mean, probably still like a church service and then memorialization. But Rachel's brother got married. He converted to Catholicism, but I was sitting on Rachel's side. It was all Mormons. Go off on that. But then they're looking at all the Catholics like, what is all this shit? I mean, it's the hack joke, but it really is like, okay, sit down, stand up, sit down, kneel. No, kneel. Now stand up, kneel, sit down. And they're just like, what's happening right now? And I knew all of it, so I'm like, just follow my lead, gang. Stretch your hammies. It's gonna be a tough Sunday morning.
That's crazy.
Anyway, yeah, dead baby. Dead baby would be my prop. Dead baby marionette, and then it would be like a marionette, but then the puppets, it would be hands, it'd be a bunch of chopped off dicks holding the marionette. I don't know. Is this a prop comic in hell, or am I just designing the coolest back tattoo you've ever seen in your life?
Oh, my God.
Metal Cruise, dude. I'm influenced. I'm the new pus head. I'm designing the new Zorlak boards.
Who's Buzzhead?
Oh, he's an artist that did like all the old Metallica stuff and did like, remember the Zorlak skateboards with like all the rotten heads on them.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I know those, but I didn't know who Pusshead was. Okay. Interesting.
All right. Your turn. What do you got?
Let's see. Gnar the Orc. If you guys could have one animal as a pet and it's trained and tame, what would it be? That's a great question. If it was true. Also, do I have to clean up after it? Do I have a team? Do I have a staff that can?
I mean, I guess that's in part of the fantasy training is that it can also handle its own duke.
The reason I ask is I would like to have an elephant, but I don't want to have to be responsible for its waste.
What are you going to do with an elephant?
That seems
though?
I just think it'd be cool to have an elephant like hanging out in the backyard. I'd love to be able to go out and just hang out with it, you know, play with its ears, you know, pat him on the back. Like, hey, look how sturdy this big guy is.
Would you ride it? Would you ride the elephant? Feet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there definitely have to be some sort of custom saddle ladder thing going on. I would love to ride
a hoist.
The elephant.
You don't want to just run off your roof Wild West style and jump on the back and gallop off into the sunset?
I think elephants are so rad, man. I'd love to have one. And then more realistic, my answer would be goats. I'd love to have some goats, especially the little small ones that do the parkour.
Yeah.
I'd love to just have a bunch of those in my backyard. Just baby being goats. Silly. Yeah. They're just baby. They're not pygmies.
Oh.
I've heard of a pygmy goat.
Pygmy anything looks...
Just because I've heard of it.
Yeah, it looks off-putting to me.
Doesn't mean it's a thing, but the fact that someone would call it pygmy as opposed to just a baby... Makes me think there's fully grown small goats.
There might be pygmy goat. You're right. She was hanging out with Orvidal on the heavy metal cruise. He said there was a moment we were joking about. We called it the Brewstering after Brewster's Millions. How recklessly he spent all his Those Who Can't money. He told me like at one point in the middle of it, he was like, I almost bought a raven. I'm like, come on, dude. He's like, but it turns out, like, you need all kinds of stuff. Like, yeah, for a fucking raven, yeah, you're going to need a lot.
Oh. See, I would have pegged Andrew as possibly the most responsible of that crew. He's got a very mature, responsible vibe to him, does he not?
No, we always laughed at how. he was spending his money like Brewster's Millions. Like, if he didn't get rid of it quick enough, he wouldn't get a larger fortune later. But then I thought like, oh, a raven would be kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a big. Yeah.
Well, now, is a raven just, raven's just a big crow, right? It's not a bird of prey. Is it? It's not a carnivore. It's not a predator.
Let's find out about him.
Or is it?
Let's learn about him. Any of several larger-bodied bird species of the genus Corvus. So it's just in there. I mean, I think that... Do they eat... What do they eat? I don't know what they eat. Wow. A collective... So it's a murder of crows.
Uh-huh.
A group of ravens... is called a rave, a treachery, an unkindness, and a conspiracy.
Jesus Christ.
An unkindness of crows.
Someone took that assignment a little too far.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, I'll come up with that.
Yeah, let's make sure no, but what if they're like the sweetest birds and then this is just the rep they get? What do ravens eat? Insects, rodents, lizards, frogs, and eggs of other birds. Regular eats carrion and garbage. All right. Cool stuff. I don't know what I'd want. I think it's a good question. I haven't been too... I don't know how to imagine outside of like maybe a larger cat.
Oh,
big cat.
I think you mentioned that before.
Like a lynx or something.
Was it you? I was talking to somebody... The idea of a giant house cat. It's the size of a tiger, but it's still a fluffy, dumb cat.
I mean, cats are cats, though. If we're talking like this thing is trained, meaning it's not going to kill you, mm-hmm. then yeah, get a panther.
No, but I'm saying panthers and that though they already exist and it's in their DNA to be predators or whatever. But what if you had a 400-pound house cat who's just like, what? I'm still a cat.
That's a trained. That's what I'm talking about, trained. Mm-hmm. If you go in fantasy, a trained panther that in no way would act upon its instincts to devour the family. But just
but wants it, the panther still has the, yeah, I guess, okay.
That's
but what I feel like the panther has still got the crazy big teeth and the claws. And
well, yeah, it's a larger version of the cat. If you get a cat that you enlarge a cat, you're enlarging all elements of the cat. You're making the teeth bigger. Is it going to have like a tiny mouth?
So are you telling me that anatomically there's no difference between a panther and a house cat other than just size?
I'm saying they're very similar.
Yeah.
That. If we're talking about any animal, this is a real animal that's trained versus a fantasy animal of a giant house cat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All the parts of the animal.
No, I agree with
you. If you expand a house cat 20 times its normal size, everything is going to be claws uh-huh. be 20 times normal, paws 20 times size normal, teeth.
Yeah, I still feel like it wouldn't be intimidating.
It's not a saber tooth. Like it's not a saber tooth. Mm-hmm. You know, panther mouth. I'm going to look up panther mouth.
Although I do love the idea of a giant panther that's just docile.
Their mouths look, I mean, the proportions of the teeth in a panther mouth look mm-hmm. similar to that of what a cat would be. A little bit bigger, a little bit bigger proportion-wise.
Imagine the size of the litter box. It would literally be a child's sandbox.
That's the thing, though. If it's trained, it'll shit in the toilet and flush.
Oh, God. Wouldn't that be great?
I wish the creep show would do that now. It fucking dropping presents on the couch every once in a while.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so.
Maybe we don't clean our litter box out enough. Well, stop shitting 9 times a day. Somebody's really, really gotten used to a regular diet. You hang on to some of that. You're used to living outside, shitting wherever you want. You're in a house now. Have a little couth. Nour the Orc. Oh, that's the one we just read. Ryan Lawrence.
Yeah, we just
read that. Lawrence says, my dog died today and this year can already piss off. I am sorry to hear that, Ryan. That's a bummer.
Sorry, Ryan. That does suck.
He says, my question is, if my dog came back as a ghost, what kind of treats do you give a ghost dog? And can I teach him tricks without using an Ouija board? I don't know, man. I don't think ghosts... I think a ghost animal would be kind of cool.
Yeah. That would be cool. I think there's been some reports of like a... I've read stories about a ghost dog and stuff like that.
I was convinced at my old house that there was like remnants of a cat. It was like always catching like shadows going around the corner out of a room or something. That was just enough to like, just to keep, you know, just to keep the imagination alive and keep, keep good memories alive. I feel like you throw a treat at a ghost dog, it's just going to fall on the floor and then be like, oh yeah, shit, sorry, you're a ghost.
Yeah.
I don't think you teach a dog a trick. If a dog came back as a ghost, like, well, I mean, ghosts aren't like, oh yeah, also I'd like to learn new skills. Like they came back as a mm-hmm. ghost for a reason. No, like
yeah. That's a pretty good trick, too.
Yeah. You're teaching them to play dead, huh? Come on, guys. Everybody, is this thing on? All right. What else we got? Dave.
Nate Z asked, Dave, would you ever go on one of those various cooking challenge shows? If so, which one? Also, Kyle, what's your favorite rap song? I'll let you answer first. Do you have a favorite rap song?
Favorite rap song? Man, I told you, man, the summer jam of last summer was that steel drum remix of Biggie's Going Back to Cali. Still gets regular right. rotation.
Okay.
I don't, my rap knowledge is not incredibly extensive. Uh-huh. Know How by Young MC, pretty good. listen to Know How by Young MC. Banger of a tune.
Okay.
Shit, man.
I know Nate didn't ask me my favorite rap song, but off the top of my head, early Ice Cube, maybe mm-hmm. a song called Summer Vacation I always liked. Just had such a good groove. Like, that's what I loved about that early Ice Cube. Just like,
yeah,
I don't know anything about samples and drum machines, but boy, just some of the beats and the grooves.
Yeah, I didn't know much either. Really, but yeah, but when I first heard NWA, I was like, what is this? This is awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Death Certificate was the name of the album that Summer Vacation appears on. But yeah, any of that, those first few Ice Cube albums, that was my jam back in high school. I was into hip hop before I got into rock and metal and stuff. Like eighth and ninth grade were my hip hop years, and then like late ninth grade, early 10th grade, I transitioned over into rock and metal.
I always like some De La Soul, some mm-hmm. Tribe Called Quest, that kind of. Stuff. Yeah.
It's good stuff.
All right.
To answer your question, go ahead.
I'm going to say, I want to hear about you. I think you would be a great fit on one of these cooking shows, as I watched a bunch of episodes of Guys Grocery Games.
I hate those shows so much.
Really?
And I don't know why, because I like to cook. I'd much rather watch, which somebody else is going to ask later, someone asked a question about George Motes, the hamburger guy. Big fan of him. We'll get to that question more. But I'd much rather watch documentary-style food stuff. I love that. I could watch that all day long. Like, or even though he's a goober, Guy Fieri, his original show, mm-hmm. Diners, Drive-ins, and Dives. Show me the restaurant. Show me the chef. Show me the pit master. Show me, you know, how they prep this stuff. I don't give a fuck about I think it's because I don't care about game shows or competition-style shows. And I know there's a bunch of decent ones now, but what's the original one that everybody loved? Is it Top Chef or something like that?
Chopped.
I hated the one where... All right, amateur chefs, in your basket, we've given you a kumquat, some sawdust, candle, and a jar of applesauce. Like, no, I don't give a fuck. I want to see a competition show where it's like, all right, what's your name? Michelle, what's the best thing you make? Chicken casserole? Make your chicken casserole. I want chefs to utilize their strengths. To me, cooking isn't about improvisation. It is sometimes. But, like, the concept of, like, hey, we put some weird ingredients in a basket and see what you can do with them. Who gives a fuck? Just make me the best pizza I've ever had. Make me the best meatloaf I've ever had. And how do you make that? Give me the tricks that you know that are better than everybody else's meatloaf. That, to me, is interesting. But to see what someone can do with an odd collection of ingredients, who gives a shit?
But that's for the TV show. That's for saying.
Not to me, it ain't. To me, it's fucking boring. Who gives a shit? I'd much rather see, all right, these three people claim to have the best chili in America. Now we're going to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, but they made that show 1,000 times already.
I've never seen a show about the best chili in America. Now, I know what you're saying, but to me, that's more entertaining than just seeing what you can MacGyver out of a basket full of weird ingredients. That's not what cooking is. When you go to a restaurant... You don't say, hey, tell the chef to round up the three weirdest fucking things in the kitchen and make something out of it. No. What's good here? I'll have that.
Yeah, but they have those shows, and it's just some boring white woman called, like, the fucking Prairie Chef, and she's like, today we're going to make my Meemaw's favorite recipe. It's chicken fried steak topped with another chicken fried steak. And everybody already know, like, you're showing me nothing. You want the fucking Waltons of cooking shows, Dave, and I want Fast and Furious.
No.
I want to see a Porsche mount a submarine and go into space, because I know that would never happen in real life, so that's why I'm watching this on a screen. I know you would never take Charleston chews and use them with bouillon cubes and a full trout, but that's why I'm watching the show.
But I don't want to eat whatever you're going to make from that, because it's not going to be good.
You don't have to
eat
it.
But no, like, I do, and I'm sure this show has existed, but I really would like to see a show, like, because there is a lot of bravado with the culinary arts. Like, well, mine's the best. No, my grandma's is the best. But, like, okay, we got three people here who claim to have the best fill in the blank. fucking have at it, and our panel of experts will pick the best. And then we'll tell you, the losers, why they are sucked or what they need to improve. Like, to me, that's interesting. And if that's been done, I'm sure it has, but I'd watch that shit all the time. Or something as simple as, I know he's a goober, but Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. Sure, here's a cool little mom-and-pop restaurant. Let's go in the kitchen and see how they make this shit. Okay, that's interesting to me. But no, I don't know. Well, and I guess maybe the competition angle, too, is it much like the same reason, like, comedy competitions, you know? Well, because comedies, I always get objective and subjective confused. To this fucking day, I don't know the
objective
difference.
Is, I do know the difference. Is, but in, okay.
Comedy's object. No, comedy's subjective.
Yeah.
Math is objective. Yeah.
Yes.
Good one. But yeah, maybe cooking. You know, cooking much like comedy. Well, people have different tastes. Well, I like something spicy, and this guy likes something. So maybe that's the problem with cooking competition. I don't know. That being said, you can, someone with a decent palate can definitely tell when something's superior to something else, and probably tell you why. Well, you didn't roast your chilies, or you didn't, you know, your technique is wrong. But yeah, I don't know why I'm so worked up about that. But no, fuck no, I don't want to be some cook. Oh man, years ago when I first moved to LA, I did a bunch of not background or extra, but audience. I did a bunch of audience work where I just go sit in the audience of these horrible fucking game shows. Yeah. I remember one day I sat in, I spent like 10 hours and I was in the audience of six.
Like $50 and a lunch or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really bad. The guy who was on the original Man versus Food guy, what's it, Adam Richman?
Yeah.
He had like something on NBC, some sort of like home amateur chef competition show like that. And I sat there for 10 fucking hours one day and I wanted to blow my brains out. It was just, oh, God, it was so bad. Just sitting there, and all right, everybody. And they'd give us candy. They'd give us, like, little Halloween candy every now and then, kind of keep our energy up. Like, all right, can I have another mini Three Musketeers?
Oh, I like a mini Three Musketeers. Put that in a coffee. Sloppy Noodle says, what's something you lost in the past that still bums you out to think about today? I somehow lost a traffic cone. My buddies and I would write shit on while smoking weed. Or drinking that we thought should be remembered.
That's funny.
I dig that, man. What am I missing? I left a pair of wingtip Doc Martens on the top of my car and drove away once.
Oh, man.
Just material goods. But I was like, man, these shoes are really cool, man. I'm a cool dude with these shoes. And then I could never find the same pair again. Yeah, what else? What else we got? You ever lose it? I mean, you downsized plenty moving into a van.
Oh,
so.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I sold everything I owned when I moved in the van. Had a big yard sale at a show, my going away show. One thing that always jumps to mind when I think about stuff like this, as I've talked about, I used to be a radio DJ. And years ago, I worked at WMLB in Cumming, Georgia. And I was the program director and then later got promoted to general manager. I was like the GM of a radio station when I was like 20. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, but it was a real mom and pop operation. And somehow I got selected to do it. But anyway, at that station, we played. That's where I first started to learn and appreciate alt country and Americana and outlaw country and shit like that. And one of the biggest bands in our genre back in the day was Whiskey Town. And it's not fashionable to like them anymore because it was Ryan Adams, and I think he did some Me Too stuff. I think he might be a creep. I don't know all the details of what he did.
I've heard some. Mandy Moore, didn't he?
I had treated her poorly. But, yeah, I'm sure the guy's a douche. But back in, like, 97, 98, they were kind of the Sturgill Simpson of their day. They were, like, the biggest genre, you know, where Sturgill's kind of the most – notable or successful. In
but
the
there
genre
was that.
Now.
That was like Whiskey Town. That was like old 97s were getting their praise. I think Wilco kind of helped with that.
Wilco, Sunvolt, Uncle Tupelo before them. Yeah, yeah. They were one of those late mid 90s, late 90s.
Clem Snide out of that scene.
Yeah, Clem Snide. But I loved Whiskeytown. They're they put out their big album that kind of broke them was Stranger's Almanac. But anyway, long story short, we'd have bands in all the time, and I worked afternoon drive, and I would interview a lot of these bands when they're coming through to do gigs in Atlanta. They'd stop by our station, and most everybody who came in. Because that genre was pretty obscure and there was no real, you know, success stories out of it. Most everybody pulled up in a Volvo station wagon with their gear hanging out the windows and stuff. And Whiskeytown rolled up on a fucking tour bus, our little bitty station, and had this tour bus. And they got out, and they spent like an hour and a half with us. I did like hour and a half, like we do a little 10 minutes worth of interview, then they'd play a couple of songs, and we had like a really good setup, like the little sound booth area where the musicians would come in and play. We, you know, so the sound quality was really good, and but yeah, just a good interview. They'd play some songs, interviews, questions, songs, but yeah, like an hour and a half, probably played like the whole album, and had it on cassette tape, and the quality was great, and lost it. Somehow lost
all of you hanging out with them and everything.
Yeah, so it was like a cool thing to like show your buddies, like, not only do I have a cool bootleg of them, but I'm the guy talking to them. And it was a really cool, I do have in my record room right now, I do have the cassette tape of me interviewing Willie Nelson.
Oh, nice.
So that's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah, I interviewed Willie Nelson back in 98. It was over the phone. It wasn't an in-studio, I wish. But
put
still,
that out well, for some bonus content for the patron. Who gives a shit about us? And like, oh, there's my dildo hell puppet. Put out old young Dave interviewing the redheaded stranger.
Yeah. Yeah, I got that on cassette. And boy, I sound young as shit. I sound like I'm 13. And but it was, yeah, that was 97, 98, whenever he... if you know, hardcore Willie fans would know his discography, but it's when he put out Teatro, kind of a Spanish guitar influenced album, really good. But he was promoting that album and was playing a show in Atlanta, and got him on the phone, and yeah, like a 10-15 minute interview with Willie Nelson. And even back then, as a youngster, I was still like big fan. Like, I've been listening to Willie Nelson since I can remember.
That's great. I'm over here like, but I lost some shoes once. You're like, oh, I had a tape of me interviewing Willie Nelson. Fuck.
No, I have that one. But I kept that Whiskeytown tape for about 10 years, and then somehow it got lost. And I think about that every now and then, like how cool that would be. What a memento to have that cassette.
No kidding, man.
But yeah, man. That's about the only thing that comes to mind in terms of, I don't think I've ever even lost my keys or wallet or anything. Like, I remember losing my keys or wallet for like a few hours at a time, but I don't think I've ever.
Yeah, or nothing that I've gotten particularly sentimental over. Just that shoe was just such a dumb thing of losing a pair of shoes. But, yeah, wow, that's. Yeah, man, put that tape up. Throw Dave and Willie chit chatting.
Yeah, man.
Zachariah says, hi, fellas, no question. Just want to say I appreciate you. Appreciate you too, Zachariah.
Well, hell yeah, Zachariah. Thanks, buddy. Here's one for you, Kyle. Yeah, but still, maybe we did this one. I don't know. Trying to get into some mountain biking, but I'm on a budget. Any tips to get my foot in the door on that without going totally broke?
Well, going totally broke is a big part of mountain biking. It's
what would a good beginner bike cost somebody? Not the cheapest thing, but just something reasonable, but this is still pretty good.
I mean, you
talking 500?
Yeah, five to a thousand. I think you should probably spend at least 500, but check out the used market. Make a nice relationship with your local bike store. You know, check the reviews first, but it's important to you know, you might spend a few more bucks than buying it online, but then you get to go in there and they can help you with maintenance issues. They can help you, you know, oh, I'm new to this. Where should I start riding? You know, they'll have those kind of questions, especially if it's a place that has a lot of mountain bikes. So having a relationship with a local bike shop is kind of important. You know, especially buy the bike from them, then you usually get maintenance or something for a year. So if something breaks or you needs adjusting that you don't know how to do, they'll handle it for you. And talk to them, because it depends on where you live. Maybe you live somewhere with a lot of crazy trails and you might get to that level sooner than later. So spend the $1,000 to $1,500 on a good bike that can handle it. Maybe you live somewhere flat, like the Midwest and you just want to go over some fun bumps and you don't need all the bells and whistles. But yeah, I'd say strike up a relationship with your local bike shop. And you're supporting a small business, so that's good too.
There you go. For those who know what you're talking about in terms of bikes and stuff, what's your current gear? What are you riding most these days? Oh, I know you have several, but what's your go-to?
I still got I got a Kona 153. Process 153. That's my monster bike. That's the one that's well beyond my means, but has kept me on the ground pretty good. I was out on that the other day. That's a 27.5 inch wheel size and full suspension. That's a big boy. Yeah, it's the one that looks like a dirt bike with no engine. I also have a hardtail. I have a Cro-Mag root down hardtail that I built up, bought the frame and built with a bunch of leftover 29er parts that I had lying around. I got a BMX bike and I got a road bike. I got too many bikes. I like bikes.
Way to go, buddy.
You know, I was trying to justify, like, I was looking at the guitars here and like I can't, it seems ridiculous. But, you know, sometimes you just enjoy the craftsmanship of the thing. Mm-hmm. Just because I can't play them well, I know that's, like, with the bikes, it's like, I bought this, all right, I'm not buying more bike shit. I got this one.
Yeah.
Let's not upgrade or do all that. Let's just stick with this. But, like, guitars, I look at them, like, I know that's a well-made thing, and I like it, whether I can play it well or not. Like, I just like having it.
I get that, and I appreciate that. I think there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
I don't have some $10,000 Les Pauls or anything. They're just nicer than what I deserve, but.
No, and it's just, even though I'm not musical, I can't do anything. As a semi-creative person, I think, I know it sounds stupid, but even if I can't play a lick of guitar, if I had the money and the space and I found a cool guitar at a pawn shop or something, I might just buy it. It's a cool conversation piece. It's cool. And I feel like, not to be too hippy-dippy Ryan Singer about it, but like I feel like nothing bad could come from just being around sources of creative.
No.
Of the creative process.
Not at all.
Being around instruments or paintings or even just having great works of literature on your mantle. Like, nothing bad can come from being around stuff like
that. Well, and to go back to our fella who is trying to learn how to live on his own these days, maybe that's something. Get yourself, like I said, a musical instrument or something. And especially, it is something about, like, oh, I could tell the difference in the quality of guitars. Because, like, oh, even though I can't play real well, if I'm holding a nice guitar, I'm like, ooh, I'm already playing a little bit better. Everything's a little smoother, goes a little easier, sounds a little richer, you know. And I will, you know, full disclosure, I have 3 Schecter guitars because a dude at Schecter straight up hooked me up. And so I will shout out.
Nice.
And this is, I don't have to say this, but man, they're fucking nice guitars.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were previously like a metal band, like a metal shredder kind of guitar company. But I got a couple, I got one Telecaster style and like a couple like more classic types. I'm like, oh, these are really nice guitars for not as much as the, like your Fenders or your Gibsons. So I am plugging them. Full disclosure, they did give me some free guitar. Asked for nothing in return. Just like, yeah, maybe if you are playing one in a video or something, just tag us. I was like, yeah, no problem.
But, hell yeah, buddy.
But that has nothing to do with how to start mountain biking. But if you're looking for affordable, very good quality guitars, check out Schecter. They skew towards metal, heavy metal designs, but they got some classics in there. I think they're under the vintage tab on their website. I'm not sure. But, and mountain bikes, fuck, man, I suck at it, but it's fun. You're in nature, it's exercise, especially in the Pacific Northwest. Like, I'm just going to go out and get muddy. Like, just accept. Like, I'm just going to get covered in mud. And then you feel like a little kid. You're like, look at me, I'm all dirty.
Oh, that's fun. Good times. It's so fun, man. So
much fun.
Laith Longacre. Hell of a handle there, Laith. Says, do you ever watch those off-the-grid shows where the people talk to the camera and act like they've been put in this crazy situation, not of their own doing, and it's so hard to live like this? Would you ever live off the grid? If so, where's your compound and what's it set up like? All right, there's a few questions there. We were watching Alone for a while. I don't know if you started watching that, Dave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I watched it a while back. I think I watched the whole first season.
They got a few seasons. That show's still entertaining to me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I don't watch the ones where it is like for A&E or TLC. I don't watch any of those. Those are all reality show fabricated type things.
What I was going to say is we've talked about this before, but refresh my memory. All right. The shit's hit the fan.
Yeah.
There's civil unrest. There's an uprising. There's chaos. Where are you going? Like, literally, geographically, what state do we... I'll come with you. We'll meet up. We need to form a small group.
Well...
Where are we going?
There was, like, that. Like a lot of people were buying... The rich people were putting their compounds in, like, the San Juan Islands outside of Seattle. Because an island, built-in defense.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
So an island's a good idea. Underground, hidden's good, but where, what you doing for you? I mean, up here we got water in the Northwest, at least for some of the time. I don't know. Part of me thinks I read Cormac McCarthy's The Road finally, and that's like a classic book, but I finished that one maybe a month or so ago. And it's just so bleak without ruining it. It's a guy and his kid, and they're just on the road, post-apocalyptic, out on the road, just trying to survive. I'm like, why? I truly, like, what if everything around you is misery, and the only reward for making it to the end of the day is to have another day the next day that's just as bad or worse? What for?
You're saying check out?
Yeah.
Just immediately? Just go ahead and check out?
I mean, give it a couple weeks.
I guess would not the motivation be that maybe one day soon this will all change and we'll be better? If I could just hang on?
You know, better
long it's
or
take,
just
6 months?
Better?
Or,
I mean, I don't know, man. Shit's pretty tight right now. I'm digging it. If my day just turned into me like throwing rocks at squirrels to try and eat some, I'm like, I'm done. Get out of here. Sucks, man.
No thanks.
I was selling a good number of tickets at clubs. I got some free guitars. Now I gotta
put up with this shit.
Now I gotta bite through this crow's head. Nah.
Oh, that's a funny
Let little
approach.
Dirty eat my eyes. She's already proven she's a survivor. She'll be fine. I'll tie a note to her.
Oh. Man, I like the island approach.
Yeah.
Initially, I think high ground, mountaintop, but boy, I do like the island because you're surrounded by food. You know, ideally, you'd be able to fish.
You're surrounded by food.
Yeah.
It makes it seem nice. Like you're just at like a Benihana. I'm the chef, but I'm also the customer, you know? It's great.
It's a great job.
Just me flipping shrimp into my own shirt pocket all day.
Oh, my God. Oh.
I like that. That's an optimistic look at it, and I appreciate that.
Yeah,
I didn't go
well,
that
because
way.
That's like the first thing I would think about. It's like, well, am I going to be able to get food?
Yeah,
you know, we're going to have to learn to hunt, or if we're on an island, we just learn to fish, learn to trap the fish.
Yeah, hunting fish.
That's
what
fishing is too, Dave. Yeah, I think fishing is only with a rod and reel.
Well, not necessarily. If you watched Alone, they create fish traps. They create like the things that are kind of...
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But it's still fishing, you know, if you have traps and nets. It's
yeah, I see what you're saying.
Doing it a different way.
I understand what you're saying.
But, yeah, I like the island approach. You know, you get surrounded by food, you know, probably decent weather. And you're right, like, no sneak attacks, no surprise attacks. You're going to see, ideally, you're going to see any intruders coming a good ways away.
Yeah, well.
Mountaintop, you might freeze to death. Underground, you may get stuck under there.
Yeah, food and water is the main thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, water. Yeah, water would be an issue on an island because I still don't understand with all the fucking technology we have that we haven't figured out how to turn salt water into drinking water.
I think they've figured it. It's just that it's hey, here comes an unsubstantiated fact from the Boogie Monster. I read somewhere like that, like oil rich countries in the Middle East, or like oil, like cities like, what is it? Dubai or what have you. They, because it's a desert, they do process all their fresh water from seawater.
Oh, really?
But the mechanism to do that consumes so much gas, like the process.
Oh.
Because they have that. Okay, so they're rich in oil.
It's not efficient.
So, yeah, so they can throw all that at their problem. But it's not efficient yet. But I agree that it's preposterous that that hasn't been sorted. Or it's sorted, it's just there's patents or somebody hasn't figured out how to make money off of it, so therefore it's not a public resource, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, man. What's the? I feel like you already have to like that lifestyle. Like all these preppers that just have a garage full of ravioli. Like, cool. Somebody's just gonna shoot you and take your ravioli.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard that concept with preppers, like, oh, you're just, if you don't have guns, you're just collecting food for the next guy.
Not wrong.
Yep.
Not wrong. I mean, and that is the sad part of like so I think it was a tweet or something, I don't know who had it, where like, now I know that Independence Day is bullshit as a movie, not because but the fact that Earth came together to defeat a common enemy. Like, after looking at COVID, like, oh yeah, we can't even agree on how to defeat this. We're not going to unite together in the face of some other tragedy. No. It's going to be a shit show.
Yep.
Best thing you could do is have a stash of food that's all poison, so when somebody does pull that nasty shit and kill you, they eat the poison food, and you're like, ha ha, you son of a bitch. Because, listen, the most important thing in a doomsday scenario is revenge. I am a petty man, and that would be awesome. Booby traps. That's what you want. Work on booby traps. If you don't have guns, booby trap all your items. Well, that's my take. You want to do one more?
Yeah, let's do one more. You got one? If not, I've got one.
Go for it. Pick one.
This is a good question. I don't know your answer. Jake Miller asks, any interest in hiking the Pacific Coast Trail or Appalachian Trail?
Interest, yes. Ability, probably not.
Yeah, same. I think it's interesting. Do I see myself committing 6 months to do it? No,
I think I would love to do it. I just, my physical shape, like, I know I have a knee that starts to hurt after a long day of airport stairs. So I'm doubting that 6 months on a trail. But I know people do it in sections. Okay. They'll go out for like and do this part for a week and then return later to do this other and like complete it over the series of a few years. So
take your knee out of it. Take physical health out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Just in terms of a lifestyle choice, you know, the commitment, the time. If physically you know you could do it and you wouldn't have to have, you know, reconstructive knee surgery at the end of it, is that something you'd do? If it, let's say, too, if you could break it up into, like, just two parts. Like, you got to go out for, like, 3 months at a time. Is that something you ever see yourself doing?
Oh, yeah. I bought all the backpacking stuff and haven't made it more than a night out by myself. I've never even done two nights in a row of just backpacking. I've just, like, hike in and then set up. Brandon Lyons is a comic here in Portland. He did some of the Pacific Trail last year, and I've talked to him about it. And he's like, yeah, it's, you know, some of it, you hear about the bad parts. One of the interesting things I heard is that the first stop, at least when I was reading about the Appalachian Trail, the first stop, it's not people buying more stuff or like getting more gear that they forgot. It's how much they're unloading.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh yeah, I thought I was going to read these four books. Like, get the fuck out of here with the books.
No.
You know, and how much stuff you realize you don't need. I don't know about the whole, I would like to pull off a 3 or 4 night backpacking trip. I would like to do that at least.
Yeah. Yeah. That would be fun.
It's scary.
I knew a buddy. I had a buddy who did the Appalachian Trail and we worked landscaping together and he talked a lot about it and, said it was great. It was a great experience, but it was real difficult. And just like you said, it was all his whole, he was obsessed when he was doing it with just being as efficient as possible. And even his food, like he would choose food on the calories to weight ratio.
Yeah.
Like certain, like he didn't like carrying canned goods. Cause he's like, that just said to you, that looks like a 12-ounce can of beans. But if that's in your backpack every day, you know, with everything else, that's valuable real estate it's taken up. So he was just always talking about there was a constant challenge of getting enough calories, but in a form to where you weren't burning what you just ate because you're carrying too much cargo.
That's that show on Alone. They always talk about how, like, effort versus reward of like, oh, I can go climb up this tree to set up this kind of trap, but the amount of calories I'll burn doing that without knowing I'm going to catch something will actually make me worse off. So I'm better off just staying on the ground and eating reindeer moss for a few more days.
Yeah. Some crazy math you got to do in that situation.
And I also bet you get, like, just psychologically, you're probably prone to getting obsessed over one detail. You know, like where you're hiking, like, oh, I got to get better footwear. I'm going to find something that fits better next time. Like, you just, because you have all day of just walking.
Yeah, of just thinking about your little annoyances and problems.
Yeah. I mean, that's been when I've done longer hikes. It is like, well, I really hope that's not the song that gets stuck in my head. It is the song that gets stuck in my head. So you just have two days of All Star by Smash Mouth and only a nonsensical 5-second clip of it. You're like, oh, this sucks. For me,
hey, it's me, Dave Stone, former co-host of the Boogie Monster podcast. From 2016 to 2023, myself and Kyle Kinane got together each week to ramble on about ghosts, aliens, Bigfoot, and other mysteries of the universe. Or at least that was our initial intentions. But if you've listened before, you know that it usually devolved into disjointed rants about Vans and fried chicken. During that time, we also ran a Patreon page that offered up exclusive bonus episodes to our patrons, usually in the form of Q&A sessions. And even though the Boogie Monster is currently on an indefinite hiatus, we're offering up those old bonus episodes to the general population so that everyone can enjoy our old nonsense. Hopefully someday soon we'll dust off our microphones and resurrect the Boogie Monster. But until then, enjoy a blast from the past from your old pals Kyle and Dave. Thanks for listening.
The city, the town I was in, but I was way out in the middle of nowhere. And it was the one where I was sleeping near a creek. And the fact that the sound of the creek masked any other sounds really creeped me out.
Yeah.
And I lost one of my senses. I felt so vulnerable.
Yeah. When it takes away. Well, that's, and I was, I mean, I've said this before, but it was like snow cover. So everything was completely silent. And you forget about deadfall. That's fucked me up too. Like, oh, don't forget about deadfall, the dead branches that are in the trees that can just break off and fall on you and cause injury or death. Like, oh yeah, I'll camp under here so the rain doesn't get me. Not so quick and not so fast, buddy.
Yep.
Well, oh, man. All right. Well, we've decided that I will die in the face of any adversity. You'd survive.
Quick to fold.
On an island surrounded by food.
Yeah. Yeah, I got to figure it out, man.
All right, man. Just
get a Brita filter or something for that ocean water.
Needs a Brita and a hibachi grill top.
Yeah.
And Dave's set. Dave's Snack Island. That's your cooking show's Dave's Island, and you just have to go. See, it's like Chopped, but you just have to find the ingredients. Now you'd be wishing that Chopped was there to throw you something weird.
Yeah, that's true.
I hope you guys like salmon again.
Well, all right, buddy. Good times.
You bet.
These are always fun.
Yeah, girl.
Patrons, thank you so much, patrons. We appreciate you. We really do.
Patrons.
Thanks for all the support. All right, buddy. I'll holler at you next week. We'll get back into it. The sun is filled with ice and gives no warmth at all.
The sky was never blue. Stars and raindrops searching for a place to fall. I never cared for you.
Thank you.